This is WSBT's Community Update on 96.1 WSBT.
Good morning. I'm John Hoffman. Community Update this week will consist of a recap of some of the leading stories from the past week.
We can't let this election be about the president. Because if Americans see us spending all of our time talking about him, they'll be left with this question, who's talking about us?
As South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg's presidential campaign continues to look more viable, reporters and opposition researchers alike are looking into his history and performance in South Bend. The South Bend Tribune reports a number of public records requests have been received in the city since Mayor Pete's first appearance on a CNN town hall March 10th. The paper reports the conservative political action committee America Rising wanted Mayor Pete Buttigieg's daily calendar since the beginning of the year. A University of Texas student journalist asked for information related to Buttigieg's Twitter account. A London-based Fox News reporter requested any Buttigieg email since 2012 that contained the keywords Trump, immigration, Pence, socialism, Black Lives Matter, racism, black people, church, Catholic, and LGBTQ. That request was rejected on the principle that it was too broad. The others were honored, along with more specific requests that later turned into media reports on Buttigieg and his campaign. This is the kind of research being done on all presidential candidates by reporters and potential opponents, and it's now a standard part of political campaigning, especially at the national level. Also this past Wednesday, Mayor Buttigieg took time out of his busy schedule to sit down with Leanne Tokars on WSBT 22's First in the Morning to talk about the campaign and some local issues.
South Bend Mayor and presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg is here this morning. Thank you for coming in, Mayor.
Good to be with you. Thanks
big,
for having me.
Big story this week, the escalating trade war with China. President Trump standing by his new tariffs, even suggesting more maybe to come. Do you think this is the right move?
I think the decision to raise tariffs, which is a tax on the American people, is of real concern. You know, earlier we saw the impact of tariffs on farmers, on the soy industry, for example, here in Indiana. Now we're seeing tariffs that are going to hit us anytime we go shopping. And it's not clear that this is part of an actual strategy. You know, China is famous for working in 10, 20, even 30-year planning horizons, and it's not clear this administration has thought past the next tweet. It shows the only way we can really succeed in the competition with China is to make sure we're doing it on our terms rather than on Beijing's. That means making sure that we have more of a level playing field and investing in our own competitiveness. If we keep taking money out of education, taking money out of infrastructure, taking out of the things that are going to help America compete, this really could prove to be the Chinese century. Tariffs aren't going to help with that issue. It is a matter of strategic competition. We need a president who actually has a strategy.
Now, Mayor, you've had a big push right now to reach out to minorities. What can you point to in your own administration and in the city to show a history of minority inclusion?
Well, obviously the fact that we launched the Diversity and Inclusion Office and have been conducting efforts to improve diversity purchasing for the city is one example of our commitment. Another is what we've done around policing, right? From the work we've done with implicit bias training to body cameras to being one of the most transparent police departments of our size, I think in the country, if you look at the level of information we put out on the web in order to help build trust largely between communities of color that have these strained relationships and police departments. There's the work we're doing for minority entrepreneurship and entrepreneurship in disinvested areas like what's happening on the West Side. And of course, everything we've been doing to better serve neighborhoods that are low income and often minority neighborhoods, beginning with the 1,000 Houses in 1,000 Days efforts, all the way through to what we were able to do at the Charles Black Center in an area of town that's one of those that had the most underinvestment over the years. Now we're trying to make sure a national audience better understands South Bend's story, because I think it will help people understand the serious and the intentionality that we've put toward inclusion here in South Bend. And of course, it's one of the reasons why the minority voters who know me best, the people of South Bend, helped put me back into office with such a strong margin when I was up for re-election.
Now, many of the minorities who have been critical of you point to the police tapes and the demotion of Chief Boykins. If you could go back and do it over again, would you handle that situation differently?
Yeah, there are several things I would have done differently. You know, one of them would have been to have more of a direct conversation. That's the last time I've ever removed, demoted, or fired somebody who reported to me directly without sitting down and having a discussion about what was happening so that it was clear to everybody and to see if there was any information that I didn't understand. It's not easy to do that. I understand why this president avoids doing that, for example, but it's the right thing to do, and it's a mistake I've not repeated. Also, the communication around the issue. You know, one of the things that we found was that, some of the concerns that people in the neighborhoods had went a lot further than the legal issues that I was paying attention to. I was obsessed with just, are we doing the right thing legally? Which, of course, is very important, and it's still one of the top concerns we have when it comes to dealing with all the fallout from that issue. But there's a lot more at stake. A lot of this was about trust. It was about the history of law enforcement and minorities, not just here in South Bend, but around the country. And I think I had to learn the hard way from residents and people who raised their concerns, just how important those things were to weigh and to hold in your mind when you're dealing with these issues. Of course, now it really is mainly a legal matter. The city's not even party to the case anymore. The people who were recorded are in court battling the Common Council, and we're going to do whatever the courts tell us is the right thing to do.
Real quick, before you leave, you're kicking off a big paving project in the city today, about 30 miles being repaved. How do you determine what areas get that work?
So it's a mix of a couple of things. Partly the prioritization is based on just where do we see the road in the roughest shape and where is it getting traveled on the most. But another part is what condition is the road in and what would it take to fix it? You know, sometimes it's as simple as laying down a skim coat just to kind of smooth out the top of the road. Other times you have to basically take it apart and put it back together. It's one of the reasons, for example, on Bendix, which I think any of us who drive on Bendix want to see that redone. It's taking longer because we actually need to get federal money in order to take the subsurface of the road down and put it back in a way that's more stable. At the end of the day, we still don't have the road funding that we need in order to cover the city the way we'd like to. It's a conversation we're trying to continue to have with the state, but we're putting those resources that we do get to the best use, and it's that balance of what kind of shape is the road in and what would it take to get it in the shape we'd like.
That's Mayor Pete Buttigieg on Wednesday's WSBT 22 First in the Morning. Local farmers are already struggling with planting this year due to heavy rains, and they say new tariffs on their products are just another blow to their bottom line. WSBT 22 spoke with two local farmers who were worried about being able to stay in business.
Farmers have taken hit after hit this year. The weather hasn't been cooperative, and now the most recent tariffs on things like soybeans and corn could threaten their very livelihood.
Just like the dark clouds over northern Indiana, the trade war is looming over farmers everywhere.
The effects of the Trump tariffs have been pretty dramatic against farmers in the community.
China slapped a 25% tariff on thousands of American products, including corn and soybeans. For Marshall County farmers Charlie Huyen and Robin Roberts, that translates into thousands of dollars in lost income.
In the last 2 years, income levels for my 1,000-acre farm has been the poorest since I started.
Both farmers say the situation is dire. Robin farms 1,000 acres and says in a good year, which they're not having right now, you can typically get 200 bushels an acre. His break-even price per bushel is $3.80, making $760,000 in total. But with the tariffs, the price is down to $3.20. It doesn't sound like a big difference, but that's more than $100,000 in lost income, which they can't afford.
You just cannot continue at these prices. There is no way you can make any money at today's prices.
Both farmers are losing thousands of dollars a day. On top of the tariffs, the diluted fields have pushed back planting by more than a month. Every day that goes by is more money going down the drain.
A lot of our money stays local and is multiplied time and time again. In a way, I feel kind of bad for everybody in the situation because it affects actually everybody, whether they realize that at this point in time or not.
Both farmers say they hope the situation gets resolved before the approaching storm does some irreversible damage.
And we reached out to Representative Jackie Walorski's office for comment on the farmers' concerns. They denied our requests for an on-camera interview and instead sent us a statement that reads, in part, "I'm concerned that escalating tariffs and retaliation will further harm manufacturers and farmers and raise costs for Hoosier families."
That's WSBT 22's Max Lewis reporting. Teachers across Indiana are upset about a new law that goes into effect July 1st. It changes the way teachers renew their licenses. Teachers can accumulate 90 hours of professional development, and how teachers accumulate those hours is currently pretty flexible. Here's WSBT 22's Caitlin Conan.
How teachers accumulate those hours is pretty flexible. Teachers can attend professional development trainings or real-world experience activities, but they get to choose. Now, teachers must dedicate 15 of those hours to some sort of business-related externship. And leaders with the Indiana State Teachers Association aren't happy. Teresa Meredith, president of the Indiana State Teachers Association, has been a teacher for more than two decades. And she says this new requirement is another example of lawmakers not respecting her profession.
Could make a law about it, so they did.
Right.
And they didn't include educators in the process at all. Didn't even talk with us about what problem they saw.
State Senator Dennis Cruz, a sponsor of the bill, says it helps teachers help students.
So they can help teach and guide those kids so they can fulfill those job opportunities that are out there.
But Meredith says that's a different conversation from whether teachers should be doing externships.
So we're already connecting with the community. We are well aware of economic impact of preparation of our students for future jobs, that sort of thing. So this was something that was absolutely not needed.
Meredith says not only was the law not needed, it's confusing.
There's no explanation of what this would be. There's no compensation for it. It's assumed that teachers aren't doing this already.
Typically, changes to the licensing process get more input from educators.
Something would come out from the State Board of Education. There would be opportunity for presentation and then opportunity for testimony and input. Educators would have the opportunity to help have impact and inform whether or not that policy that the State Board might be interested in should happen and become code. In this case, none of that happened.
Meredith says teachers are highly educated. Many have more than one degree. She says they know what they're doing, and it's time for lawmakers to start recognizing that fact.
Teachers have just had it with this disrespect from our lawmakers.
I reached out to the author of this bill, Representative Holly Sullivan of Vanderburgh and Warwick counties. She sent me a statement just a few moments ago. She says these requirements were recommended by the governor's workforce cabinet and were crafted with input from counselors, educators, former educators, parents, and the Department of Education.
WSBT 22's Caitlin Conan reporting. Americans travel something like 11,000 miles a year on average. Most crashes are because of our own doing. WSBT 22's Max Lewis is back with word on a couple of local intersections with records of fatal crashes.
It probably comes as no surprise that speeding and distracted driving are the top causes of serious car crashes, but how much does the design of the roads we drive factor into them? Experts we talk to say both play a role, and two families that have experienced the unimaginable agree.
This curve on State Road 23 in Granger is known to many. Hundreds drive this stretch of road every day, not noticing the two crosses that sit on each side.
He's a funny kid. Very funny. Yeah.
Those crosses do get noticed each time Trish and Eric Lane drive that stretch of 23. It brings back memories of December 3rd, 2015, a day they wish never happened.
He was coming home from he worked part-time. He was a senior in high school, and he worked part-time at Chick-fil-A.
A day still painful to talk of more than 3 years later. Around 10:30 that evening, their son Jack's car went off the road, hitting a tree. He was killed instantly, less than a mile from his home.
He was so close. He was almost home. And I think that's one of the hardest things is to know he was almost there.
Police said at the time excessive speed was a factor, but Jack's parents say the road is also to blame. In the past 5 years, there have been seven crashes at that curve.
This stretch of road right here can be difficult for a number of reasons.
State Police Sergeant Ted Bonner says this particular area is well known to troopers.
You have two different intersections within a long sweeping curve, so it's one of those types of situations where you have to be paying attention and watching your speed and also your distractions.
Distractions like the one that took the life of 21-year-old Logan Nelson.
Must have just eaten and then took off on his bike, went for a ride because it was a beautiful day.
That beautiful day quickly turned dark as Logan was going through the intersection of County Roads 17 and 18 in Elkhart County. A driver ran a red light, throwing him from his motorcycle and killing him. Police say the driver was going about 45 miles per hour and told officers, quote, he was not paying attention.
I truly believe it is the worst loss that a person can experience, is having their child die before them.
And the driver that struck and killed Nelson was cited for running a red light, but was never charged. The lanes are in talks with the nearby church on 23's curve to put in more safety features.
It is a difficult problem because so many drivers do things behind the wheel even though they know it can be dangerous. Using cell phones tops the list.
The views expressed on WSBT's Community Update are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, WSBT Radio, its staff or management. Join us again next week on Community Update on The Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT.